So here is what it looks like high up liquid. So at a 45 degree of liquidy, which last occurred 6 million years ago, and this is the latitude that the Phoenix landing site was at, there were between 20 and 50 days a year that liquid water, pure liquid water, could occur. So that, again, is kind of the logic behind the icebreak mission. Go back to the Phoenix landing site and sample, again, for organic molecules and search for actual biosignature in life. So here's the kind of a blow up again of the of liquidy in the last 10 million years, going back in time to the right. Here's where we are right now. And as you go back in time, you get to these much higher liquidies. And this solid line here, this is where you start to get substantial melting down to tens of centimeters in the subsurface. So the average of liquidy, it turns out, is more like 40 degrees. We just happen to be in a really bad period on Mars right now. So by drilling to 1 meter, we can get and analyze samples that represent the entire range of these potentially habitable conditions. Here's a picture of an icebreaker drill, which is a 1 meter drill. So as I said, Icebreaker uses the same lander as Phoenix and InSight and goes to the well-characterized Phoenix landing site. Partly that is for cost reasons, because we don't have to do landing site certification. And Discovery, the program we're trying to get into, is a very cost-constrained program. So the site we know has proven near-surface ice. It's rock-free, and it's flat. So it's a very safe place to land a simple three-legged lander. It's not a rover, it's just a lander. And it's a solar-powered lander. So it has these two life detection instruments, again, the 1 meter drill, and cameras that are really devoted just to operating the landers. They're not really focused on doing a more sophisticated geology kind of mission. We leave those to Jake.
I can see the lawn furniture. So I am posting tonight on the website on Enterprise Mission. I sent it over to Keith, and I hope he's listening. A close-up of something that, if it's not lawn furniture, it's the next best thing to it.
All right, these are of the new images.
New images, yes.
And
so
again,
Tom does not have to comment, but he can look and enjoy like the rest of
us. Dr. Van Flanderen, the first
number shot. And when you look at these two raw images side by side, there's nothing in the Sidonia shot from last week, and you can see beautiful features in the Viking shot from 20 years ago. Well, the shot tonight across the city is much more comparable to the 20-year-old quality of Viking than the Mars Surveyor shot earlier this week. So we're seeing real things.
May I ask a question?
Anything.
Remy.
Bimodal means it's got two poles.
Oh.
It comes up in two places.
Right, bipolar disorder. Sure.
There is no way that these can be dust. Because dust and the airs of Mars flow all around the planet. You have global dust storms, boys and girls. That's what we just stopped discussing, right? So how can you falling down, you know, steep cliffs and other places on Mars only in two areas that are 180 degrees apart? So I looked at this, and I looked at this, and I looked at this.
You can't. It's water.
No, it's got to be water. Well, let's put it this way. It has to be a fluid.
A fluid of some sort.
It might not be. I mean, you know, if you want to be very scientific.
Well, water is a good guess.
Water is a very good guess.
If we think there was a lot of water on Mars, then it follows there could be still, obviously, could still be water below the surface.
But as we said in our original note last year, those dark things could be oil.
Well, it could be.
They're so damn dark.
It could be.
Tommy Gold, you know Tommy Gold?
And the way it's going, in about 35 years, it'll be financially worth bringing oil back from Mars.
George, you hear that? You want to drill in Mars? I've got a place for you.
Yes, indeed.
Long pipeline. Very long pipeline. Anyway, Tommy Gold, who is a brilliant astrophysicist, he actually was the one who coined the term pulsar and neutron star.
Yeah.
He has proposed that the oil on Earth is not due to organisms, the little biogenic things, ancient guys buried by sediment.
I thought it was dinosaurs. Yeah.
Or dinosaurs, you know, we're digging up the T-Rexes and putting them in our gas tanks.
Right.
He is claiming, with some reasonable evidence, that the production of oil is not biological, but is chemical. And yeah, it involves hydrocarbons, but those are made, you know, naturally as opposed to with life, and that any planet with enough chemistry should have deep layers of oil under its surface, even if it never had life.
Well, then, shouldn't there be here on Earth more oil forming underground?
But it takes a long time to form.
Oh, well, I understand, but shouldn't they be able to see, even at the macro level, some development of new oil?
It would depend on where you're drilling, and in other words, how would you know if you're drilling into a pool in sediment that it isn't a biogenically formed?
Well, shouldn't they see something in process, in you know?
Well, Gold's theory is so controversial, and it has not been really tested yet. I think they tried to test it in the Baltic Sea.
I'd be more comfortable with the fluid idea, the water idea, even than oil.
Well, but you have to be kind of objective here and say it could be another fluid. Back down to the map, all right?
All right.
Because the map is gold. I mean, this is where Efren is hopefully listening tonight, because we've not told him what we figured out from his map.
All right.
For me, the bright spot of COVID was actually seeing the team that we had pull together and actually
nervously watch the launch from home.
Journey through the valley of fire at the center of the red planet. Enter, if you dare, the haunted Martian city of the dead. Creatures who refuse to die. Encounter the Colossus of the Universe, the mighty Wizard of Mars, conqueror of a thousand worlds, master of the stars. Witness a battle with a gigantic spike pendulum of death at the center of time. See the Holocaust as two great universal forces destroy the mighty Martian time zone. The Wizard of Mars, starring John Carradine as the Wizard.
Launch director, LD is go, and you have permission to launch.
It's like the bouncing of my leg is accelerating as we're getting closer.
That's good air temperature right there.
28 seconds to launch.
7, 6, 5, 4, engine ignition 2, 0, relation 10, lift off.
Speechless with what just happened. It's surreal. I don't know what else to say other than I still can't believe that I just saw that.
It's pretty magical. You know, it's what we get to do.
Ah! I'm terrified and really excited. But it's scary.
Perseverance is on its 7-month journey to Mars. But for Elio Murillo, the hardest work has just begun.
We're working around the clock. Tonight, for example, I have to go in at 7 and I won't leave probably till 4 in the morning. And that's kind of the nature of the work to make sure we prepare for our landing on the red planet. We are working with the Earth version of Perseverance, which we've called Optimism. The rover and the computer that it has on board is exactly the same as the one that's on Perseverance. My job is literally the one they portray in The Martian.
Is this the replica?
This is her.
Okay, let's see it.
Where there's a lab that has the Earth versions of all the vehicles.
That's
right. I work in the real lab that has the Earth version of all the vehicles that have gone to Mars.
It's called the Mars Yard. Here, Optimism, Perseverance's twin, faces some of the same challenges Perseverance will face on Mars.
Only real way to do that is through simulation. So the Mars Yard is where we actually perform driving. We have soil that kind of looks like Martian sand, if you will. There are rocks that we replicate. And we have slopes as well, so that we can climb the vehicle on the slopes. In doing that, we typically will find bugs.
Glitches in the software, the rover's brain.
And as we come up with fixes, we will uplink those fixes to the real vehicle. And that is the purpose of my team, so that hopefully we find these issues before they happen on the real vehicle.
And we now have a general idea of the thickness of its crust. Further evidence of volcanic activity in the past is seen from the surface, where a variety of volcanic rocks are pitted with gas pockets and sharp or angular in appearance. Face the day-to-day environment of Mars, and obviously, many have been reduced in part to the Martian dust. Let's examine the Martian environment as told to us through the Viking mission. To begin, the temperature. The temperatures appear to vary the same day-to-day, starting as an approximate low average temperature of 190 degrees Kelvin just before the Martian dawn. The temperatures rose to an average upper temperature of 240 degrees Kelvin. This temperature range appeared day in and day out relatively the same, almost to the point of monotony. Next, the atmosphere. The extremely thin upper Martian atmosphere consists of some familiar gases. The most abundant is carbon dioxide, a gas that we breathe out. There is carbon monoxide, dangerous to life as we know it, argon, oxygen in small amounts, atomic oxygen, nitric oxide, and a small but significant amount of nitrogen. Additional argon and nitrogen data reveals that Mars once had a much denser atmosphere, which could have supported running water. An analysis of the Martian soil shows an iron-rich clay with an unusually high amount of sulfur. The elements that make up this clay are familiar. Iron. Silicon. Magnesium. Aluminum. Calcium. And sulfur.
So at any given point, patient thereafter. And so a particular medium, she was a Swiss medium named Helene Smith, she claimed to have her spirit traveling to Mars, and she was describing life on Mars. And of course, this might not be surprising, but they were building their homes next to the canals, as one might expect, just like we're near roads and, you know, us
civilization, basically. So she was describing life, and she even had the alphabet. This is the Martian alphabet you're looking at from 1895. She was studied by psychologists. Eventually, I think they thought that she was just merging some French and Swiss together to create this language. But like I said, this was spreading to all different kinds of people. Advertisers. So I love this. This is a booklet that came straight from Percival Lowell's scrapbook. So this is like an early pharma ad, basically. This is a little booklet. It was called the Mars Gazette. And the story that's told in this little booklet is that a doctor with these particular pills had basically sold them to all the doctors of Earth, and it was curing everybody with some sort of miracle cure-all pill. And now he needed to expand his market. So where do you go? You go to Mars. There's plenty of people there. So here he is flying on Mars, distributing his medication to those alien from whatever they're alien from on Mars. And it's probably a little hard to read from back there, but this illustration here of the king of Mars flying on this winged creature is King Flammarion. So sort of a nice homage to Camille Flammarion, who we just spoke about. Soap companies also got very into the scene. They loved Martians. Apparently Martians really stink. So they were willing to help them out with that situation. I don't know why that was the assumption, but I love this. Mars is peopled, and they want Kirk's soap. And then this one, send us up some Pierce soap. That's the first message from Mars. So maybe when we do make contact with extraterrestrials, that will be their first request, is can we get some soap? That'll be the big puzzle we've been searching for. So of course, all these thoughts, they, you know, became part of popular culture, inspired different writers and thinkers. Here you're seeing John Carter of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs. By the way, John Carter, if any of you read those, he starts off in a cave in Arizona, probably not far from the Lowell Observatory. I'm sure it was inspired by Percival Lowell. And this is Science and Invention magazine. This is from 1924 with an illustration of a Martian. This is this was a magazine published by Hugo Gernsback. He's actually the man who coined the term science fiction. If anyone here likes science fiction novels, there's an award called the Hugo, which is named after Gernsback. He also predicted a lot of different technologies that would come to pass. So this guy was a very interesting scientific thinker, and he wrote in this magazine his whole idea of the evolution of Martians. And so this is what his Martian would look like, which is not unlike the one we looked at from the New York Times in 1912 by Edmund Perrier. So again, you have the sort of tall, spindly legs, the large chest. Here's more of a snout to kind of pull in the scent through that thin atmosphere. And the antenna, I think he believed that they could communicate telepathically.
Life on Mars? For centuries we have wondered. Now, for the first time, through the new photographic miracle of Cinemagic, you will see the wonders of this strange and terrifying world when you see the Angry Red Planet. Join this daring crew, the first in the scientific race between nations, to attempt to land on Mars.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Blast off from Earth with courageous astronauts Gerald Moore, Nora Hayden, Les Tremaine, Jack Crucian. Travel thousands of miles through space to the unknown. Magic is not being shown to you now, but this wild land comes alive in Cinemagic. You'll see buildings miles high in Cinemagic. Journey to the center of sudden terror in Cinemagic. Be trapped by the tentacles of man-devouring plants in Cinemagic. Feel the fire-hot breath of a 40-foot monster as it reaches for you in Cinemagic. Your eyes will see the wonders of a world no eyes in this world have ever seen before.
I wonder, will we ever get back to Earth?
And Mark. March 2020 Perseverance is, in fact, our first mission from NASA that's specifically designed to answer these astrobiology questions on Mars. And if I could have the next graphic, please.
Career of working on these rovers, it's exciting to see how we just incrementally built up the capabilities of the engineering and the science to have this enormously capable rover today called Perseverance. This, I'm going to talk a little bit about what those capabilities are. I would say Perseverance is unique in that all of her capabilities are very much focused on her science mission. Now, her science mission is challenging. She needs to go explore, find, select, actually core and cache samples for future return to Earth. And so we've needed to add a lot of new things to Perseverance to make her able to do that. And we want her to do that in a location that is interesting enough to find samples that we want to bring back to Earth. And so that brought us to needing to add our first new technology. Our first new technology was terrain relative navigation. Now, we leveraged a lot of the Curiosity entry, descent, and landing system, but when Ken Farley and the science team decided that they wanted to land at Jezero Crater, we realized that the current Sky Crane landing system would not land us there safely enough. And so, you know, you can kind of think if it's more scientifically interesting, then it has more engineering hazards. So you can go here to my next graphic, which shows what terrain relative navigation is. The engineering team, you know, got on board to say, well, we need to make this landing site safe. And so we added what is essentially our astronaut that we take to Mars that steers us away from hazards, and we call it terrain relative navigation. Can't take an astronaut, so we load Mars orbital maps that we get from the orbiters that are marked with hazards, and then we use a camera to take pictures as we're descending onto Mars, and then we compare those, figure out where we are in the map, and then divert by firing engines to get away from the hazards so that we can land safely. So this new technology allows us to land in Jezero Crater, which is where the science team wants to go to do this investigation. Now, another interesting part of entry, descent, and landing. Now, entry, descent, and landing is always harrowing. It's hard, right? Mars is 100 million miles away. You start at 12,000 miles per hour at the top of the atmosphere. You have to get to zero 7 minutes later. And so it's a nail-biting thing. And we've added something to Perseverance, which is especially cool, so that we will get a front row seat. The vehicle actually has the ability to take selfies as it's going through the entry, descent, and landing process. Go ahead and show my next slide.
With regard to the one taken last week, we all raised hell about the quality. Dr. Malin finally came back and said, well, it was cloudy, it was hazy, and that accounts for why the raw strip was seemingly absolutely black. Do weather conditions change? After all, the picture we took yesterday now, the one we're about to talk about, is quite clear. And do weather conditions change that quickly on Mars, Richard?
Well, yes, you can have dust storms, you can have clouds. The problem with clouds is that they produce a bright, hazy picture, not a dark picture. And the other thing I point out in my recent posting of this evening is that the detectors, the actual camera elements in
yes.
his wondrous camera,
yes.
go from the green, about 5,000 angstroms, down to 9,000 angstroms, which is in the infrared. And infrared light cuts through haze. So if anything, we should have gotten a clearer image than Viking 20 years ago.
So then,
what
are you saying? You saying his explanation is bogus?
I have said from the beginning that we need documentation from the get-go, from Mars to Earth, exactly how we get these frames.
Right.
NASA used to provide truckloads, armloads, ocean liner loads full of documentation. On this mission and on these particular images of Cydonia, we have had to pull, like pulling teeth out of porcupines, to get the minimal documentation of what's going on. And obviously, we're not going to be satisfied until we get a full understanding of what happened to reduce the resolution of the images taken last week. And again, by the way, we're not looking at the best possible specs of this camera tonight. The images that Malin has given us of the city are literally only half the resolution in one direction. one quarter in both directions. In other words, they're 400% smaller in terms of resolution than they could have been if he had used the full 2,048 pixel width of his camera.
Why is... Now, I want to understand that, Richard. The explanation that people have given me is that he was afraid he was going to miss the sight, and so he used half the resolution to get a wider swath of geography in the frame. Now, is that right or not?
No, it's not right, because
not
the
right.
width is determined by the altitude of the spacecraft above Mars. It's a fixed-focus camera. It has a little less than a half a degree field of view. It's basically a long focal length telescope.
Okay.
The sampling system is a rotary percussive drill from Honeybee Robotics. We have been testing this drill in the Atacama Desert for the last 3 years, mounted on a rover, going into all kinds of different soils, including cemented soils. They're actually cemented by salt, by halite. In fact, this is in a field of cemented halite. And so we've been essentially bringing the TRL up and testing this drill. And if not culture, like 80% of the organisms that are in that environment. And so we were trying to go to Mars, a completely alien environment, and very extreme, and try to culture them with what was effectively chicken soup. So at the scale of microorganisms, shape is not convincing. So what you really need to do is look for biosignature molecules. So Icebreaker's approach is to look at, with a GCMS kind of instrument, look at the lipids and their distribution, to look at amino acids and their distribution and their handedness. Turns out life picks one particular orientation of amino acids, and the other, which is a mirror image of it, it doesn't use. And we would expect that to always be true, because you can't make the complex peptides with a mixture. So this would be the strategy for searching for life with the instrument that is a Viking-like instrument, except that we have added a feature that will extract the organic compounds prior to heating them up. So that's a chemical extraction process, so that we don't oxidize them by the perchlorate. We also have an instrument that we've been collaborating with the Center for Astrobiology in Spain for many years. This is a called the Signs of Life Detector, solid, and it's a very solid instrument. I mean, they always show up. We've had this in the Atacama for 4 years. They always are able to do sample analysis, and they are always able to get results. You can't say that about very many flight instruments. Basically, it's based on immunoassay, which is the same kind of technique that you use when you get a blood test or almost anything. So it's a very well-known pharmaceutical technique. It's never been flown before, but it's basically growing up antibodies to the compounds you want to detect, and then printing those antibodies onto an array, and then you put the sample in, you mix it with water, you shake it, and then you let it sit on that array for a long, like an hour, and if the compounds are there, they react with the antibodies, they bind with the antibodies, and then you can detect them because they give off fluorochromes, and you look at them with the camera. So this is all nice. We hope we win. What has it got to do with human missions to Mars? Well, human missions, or any missions to Mars, are actually governed by this thing called the Outer Space Treaty. And the treaty states that the parties to the treaty will pursue studies of outer space, including the moon and other bodies, and conduct exploration so as to avoid their harmful contamination and also adverse changes in the environment of the Earth resulting from the introduction of extraterrestrial material. So this is the basis for the Coast Guard regulations on planetary protection. Sample return from Mars is restricted. It is restricted even for robotic missions. And human return from Mars would be restricted, and it would be a restricted sample return. This is not something you get just advisory. This is, has the force of federal law and applies to SpaceX as well as anyone else. So by the Constitution, essentially. So why, what is the issue? humans and materials returning from Mars pose a risk to Earth, and that risk needs to be evaluated realistically with data. Now, maybe it isn't just, you know, big green creatures are going to kill the president like they did in Mars Attacks, the movie. this was, in fact, a female creature in Mars Attacks. microbial contamination of Earth is itself very dangerous. Now, it has been argued, in fact, I believe by Robert Zubrin, that it's low risk because Martian materials capable of hosting viable microbes arrive on Earth at an average rate of 10 kilograms per year. And they've been doing that for all of geologic time. So Earth may already be contaminated by Mars life. There's a counter-argument, which is the way engineers think, which is that maybe it's low risk, but it's a very high consequence. If contamination of Earth by a competitive alien species, it could be very bad.
In terms of abundance, silicon and iron are in the largest amounts. Silicon is also one of the most abundant elements in the Earth's crust. Magnesium, aluminum, calcium, and sulfur exist in significant amounts. The soil samples appear to be very similar in composition at the two different sites on Mars, but nowhere were organic carbon compounds found in the soil. The absence of organic carbon compounds affects the interpretation of the three biology experiments conducted on the surface of Mars. One experiment used a sample of Martian soil moistened with a liquid that included foods that Earth microorganisms thrive on. A sample of the Martian atmosphere was pumped into the chamber, and if there were microorganisms in the soil, the gases given off would later be detected, possibly indicating the presence of life. At the results of this experiment. If there is life, the gases should vary over the days shown. This data does not exclude the possibility of life, but neither does it strongly support it. The second biology experiment involved another sample of Martian soil, also moistened with a liquid containing nutrients. But this time the nutrients were tagged with radioactive carbon-14. If the organisms were in the soil sample, they would have taken in the nutrients and passed off radioactive carbon with their gases. The gases, when analyzed, would have indicated the presence of life. Let's take a look at the results of this experiment. The soil samples behaved remarkably similar at both landing sites on Mars. Here is a graph of the results at one landing site, and here is the graph of the same experiment at the other landing site. The similarity is remarkable, showing a reliable experiment, and the immediate change from radioactive carbon dioxide to carbon monoxide strongly suggests the presence of life, although there are non-biologic explanations. Still, let's compare this experiment conducted on Antarctic soil.
difficult.
Did X-rays, which form an X-ray diffraction pattern on a CCD, from which crystallographic and mineralogical information can be obtained. The rover is meant to rove about 20 kilometers in its one Martian year, which is 687-day Earth-day life. And so that's kind of a capsule summary of the mission. We'll talk more about that when we get to the pre-landing events. Of course, in order to get to this point in time, as we've talked about before, there's a lot of work that has to go on to take place. You were shown the buildup of the Atlas. If I can have the next animation, please. We'll talk about how the rover, the story of the rover here at Kennedy. We arrived on a C-17. We trucked some mechanical support equipment across the country from JPL in Pasadena, but we flew both the cruise stage and then on a later flight, the descent stage and the rover here on C-17s from March Air Force Base in San Bernardino. The cruise stage arrived in May, and the descent stage arrived in May. Descent stage and rover arrived in June. This shows the cruise stage being spun to determine mass properties and also as a checkout with a spin table for the later heavier mass descent stage and rover that would be required. Here's the descent stage being unwrapped from its packing protective and being inspected. The very complex piece of equipment that is roughly the same mass as the rover when it is fueled.
Image. The wheels are covered with anti-static wrap, and we do take that off before launch, so no worries there. And then you can see the rover's upside down in this picture. So you see the mast is actually stowed underneath the rover. You can see the American flag there at the bottom of the mast. Now, something that just kind of brings it home as far as how amazing this rover is the turret that's on the end of the robotic arm.
Suspense of this first two-man space probe traveling more than 71 million astro miles toward Mars. Here are all the unexpected terrors of outer space.
Unidentified flying mass. Dead ahead.
Collision course. Fire main retros.
Firing main retros.
Gravity's taking over, pulling us down. Prepare to eject. Emergency procedure.
Blast off when you're ready.
The scorching surface of the fire swamp that is Mars. A world no man has ever seen, and now one man must explore alone.
Moving on to what a minute is, it is first important to understand what exactly a day on Mars is like, and to do that, we need to understand what exactly a day is. A day on any planet is the time it takes for the planet to rotate once on its axis relative to the sun. That is, if you stand at one location and begin the day with the sun overhead, a full day would not have passed until the sun is directly overhead again the next day. While an Earth day is roughly 24 hours, or specifically 23 hours and 57 minutes to be exact, a Martian day, also known as a sol, is exactly 24 hours, 39 minutes, and 35 seconds long in Earth time. Now, going back to what a Mars minute is, a Mars solar minute will be 1/60th of a Mars solar hour, and a Mars solar hour will be 1/24th of a Mars day. So, after doing some quick math, we can determine that a Mars minute is actually equal to 1 minute and 1.5 seconds of Earth time, and a Mars hour is actually equivalent to 1 hour, 1 minute, and 39 seconds on Earth.
Not.
Fantastic achievement. It is, in fact, equivalent to hitting a farthing at Calais with a bullet fired from Dover. But the great question is, what will Mariner reveal? Of course, the possibility of life on Mars has been debated for many years. Faint lines seen on the surface have led to the idea that these were canals dug by the Martians, but I don't think anybody goes that far these days. A final answer to the tantalizing question will probably have to wait for a soft landing on Mars with a spacecraft, but that is still a few years away.
All right, everybody. For those of you that don't... Good morning.
Yeah, hello.
Fixed in time.
Can I do... Don't know.
Ah, that's where the break... I mean, I got to tell you that the emotional high, pun intended, of coming up with the answer to this and finding it was the answer to a whole series of mysteries going back, which maintained those tides.
It would.
So it would always be the same side. You were standing on the big planet with Mars as a moon.
Yeah.
You'd only see one hemisphere.
Okay.
We have a weird situation. We've had it since the 70s when Mariner 9 first went into orbit. They found that there's this huge bulge in Mars. Go down to the next graphic, okay?
Okay.
This is a MOLA graphic. The MOLA is the Mars Orbiter Laser Altimeter.
Yes.
It's bouncing, pinging laser pulses.
Right.
Measuring the altitude of various things under the spacecraft orbiting Mars now.
Right.
So it's developed this incredible, complete Mars map of the altitudes to an error rate of less than a few centimeters.
Okay, I'm on it.
Okay. Notice that the red stuff, it looks the key at the top.
Yeah, what does that indicate? Okay. What is that color scale? What does it mean?
The blue stuff is low.
Right.
The red stuff is high.
Okay.
Look at where the red stuff is.
They're opposite.
Opposite.
Roughly.
Yep. Now, the one on the left is reversed from the previous diagram. The one on the left is what's called the Tharsis Bulge, where all that huge bulge, the Tharsis Bulge, has all those big volcanoes. About half a degree is the width of the full moon seen from Earth. So that's the width of the image.
So then why use a lower resolution?
I'm supposed to put this data out there and let everyone just look at it. But they... Now, if you call the 800 number, you can also get the Monuments of Mars.
Bad. But if you can, Ron, are you able to see it?
Another enhancement of our thing. Much better. Much better.
Your thing.
The thing on Mars. The city. The thing on Mars.
The thing on Mars. What is the thing? In other words, what leads you to believe the thing is not natural?
Okay, Ron, you now have a chance to take a look at it.
Oh, ever so briefly, just on the browser, and I don't know what to think about it. There's a lot of things I see there. I don't know for sure if all of the lines and stuff that I'm seeing on there are just artifacts of the image, or there is a feature there, though, that looks like, how can I describe this? If you took an S and made a nice flat S out of it, and then another S and crossed it, like you made a cross that was kind of like windmill blades, kind of.
Right.
There are some bright areas and shading that gives you some of these unusual shapes. Things in geology, when you have things crossing one another, like faults or something like that, there needs to be an offset. Faults don't make X's on the terrain.
So there are living off the land, fuels, breathable air, water to drink, grow plants, etc. And not only that, but in many places, as high of latitude or low of latitude as 39 degrees, this ground ice is very close to the surface. And the ones we know about that are very close to the surface are because meteors hit the surface and excavate the ice. And the high-rise imager has actually discovered these as they occur. And the lowest latitude one they have found is actually at 39 degrees. And the depth of these, the depth of the white ice that's being excavated, is only less than a meter. Well, let's go back to this particular picture, which is, this is current obliquity, right? This is hundreds of days a year where, this is 39, by the way, this red line here, hundreds of days a year that liquid water can occur at the surface of Mars. And this has not been modeled, but I believe that if once I ever convince anybody to do this modeling, that as you go down into the subsurface, you will see that at current obliquity, you can have melting down to a meter in the mid-latitude ice. Should it make sense, you know, because it's based on models from the Phoenix landing site area. So another issue is that the samples collected by the Mars 2020 rover are very unlikely to provide us any useful information. For one thing, the proposed landing site is deliberately away from special regions, that is, regions where viable biology can occur. And secondly, it collects samples of ancient rocks, hoped to contain fossils of ancient rocks, of ancient life. And then it puts those samples in little tubes and it scatters them on the surface. It doesn't even keep them on board. It just leaves them on the surface for some future mission to go pick them up and bring them back to Earth. And that future mission has not been selected or planned. I guess they maybe have a plan, but there is no funded future mission to go pick those samples up. And to some extent, they're relying on interest in the samples to be the thing that drives that future mission. Well, all this could take a very long time, right? And by the way, Icebreaker doesn't happen soon enough. Icebreaker, because of the particular opportunity we had to propose for this time, won't get to Mars until 2029. So we propose that we use Icebreaker as essentially an entry to a biosafe on Mars. This would be a concept mission for life detection at a human landing site as part of site certification. The idea is that we collect samples with the rover carrying a drill. We do this sensitive detection of amino acids and lipids and larger biomolecules, and we do a chemical characterization.
Is found. How long can a man stay alive?
My two most difficult problems are air and water. I have, with what's left in my tank and one reserve cylinder, enough oxygen for about 60 hours. Of course, once my air gives out, water won't matter.
No air to breathe. But suddenly an unexpected source of oxygen. The life-giving miracle of the yellow stones that burn like coal. Here is a modern Robinson Crusoe struggling for survival in a cruel environment. Finding water. Discovering a source of nourishment. But unable to lick the most terrifying problem of all.
You've got to face the reality of being alone forever.
The devastating laser beams with which spacemen from the constellation Orion excavate the rare minerals of Mars. The escaping slave worker who becomes a modern man Friday. The storm of burning ashes whose fury descends on Mars.
Meanwhile,
There is no lack of speculation about life on Mars and life throughout the universe. One man who firmly believes in its existence is the professor of physics at Cornell University in America. He's also done some work for the Space Agency, and he is acknowledged as a brilliant scientist. We asked him for his views on Mars, Mariner, and the great question of whether we are alone in the universe. Professor Philip Morrison.
Now, we don't know what's going to come back, and it might be that those pictures contain something fascinating. Personally, I don't think they will. I think they'll give us, well, something new. A look at a planet from 5,000 miles high that we never saw before. But I don't expect to see those canals and channels and road maps that were drawn 50 years ago. It seems pretty clear to people now that if there were anything like a developed civilization, even an ancient and ruined one on Mars, we would long since have learned something about it by light or by radio. And we have had nothing of that kind from that planet. No, I think we have to accept that if there is life on Mars, it is at best a slow sort of life, getting along in nooks and crannies of a high-altitude, Arctic tundra condition. The worst conditions, I should think, that we would find anywhere on Earth do not compare to the aridity, cold, and thin air of the Martian climate. But the extreme variability of our own life forms, which extend from the boiling hot springs to the Arctic snows, and you know the rest of it, you know the complexity of it all, suggest to me that a whole planet isn't going to sit there for billions of years on the margin of being livable, even to, according to the standards of life fit for life on Earth, and not develop some living form, if indeed it is true that the origin of life is a statistical kind of matter, coming whenever and wherever the right physical, chemical, energetic conditions are available. We don't know this to be true, though I believe it is so. If we can find that, then we'll know for sure, because we've seen it twice, that the origin of life is not a miracle, but a statistic, the result of uniform, however complicated, physical and chemical and energetic conditions suitable for its own development. And that is a big question, because if we do establish that fact, and if it is true, then we can presumably argue that wherever in the whole galaxy circumstances permit it, living forms may sooner or later arise. And you see what that means. That's one of the key links in that long chain of argument that leads us to believe that we may not be alone in this big galaxy.
Ice cap and the wild surface storms that cover the planet with freezing cold. The holocaust of searing hell when Mars and a flaming asteroid collide and turn the ice cap into molten lava. The violent celestial bombardment of Mars by attacking humanoids from another galaxy.
This shows the rover in its ready to launch configuration. The final cover is being removed from the wheels. This is a Pathfinder activity for installing the RTG. Shows how it was done on the pad, although in that case we did not have, of course, the fairing mount.
Did that on Martian soil. You can see this experiment could favor the presence of life. But remember the first experiment, no organic carbon compounds, and finally, our third experiment. In the third and final biology experiment, a sample of the soil was placed in a chamber where it received a small amount of moisture and an atmosphere of carbon dioxide gas packed with radioactive carbon-14. Simulated Martian sunlight was introduced, and if plant-like organisms were present in the soil, they would capture the carbon-14. Later, the original carbon-14 gas was flushed out of the container, and the chamber was heated to over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Things go wrong, we better figure out how to fix it through software, because at this point in time, we can't send mechanics to Mars.
What do big volcanoes do, Art? They belch stuff out.
Right.
Sort of thing. So that's another type of anomaly, anomalous things that I would look for in some of these features that I see.
Dawn. drive. There's only one thing I'm conscious of. I only know I can't.